Yeah, well, I mean, this crisis, like, you know, one of the reasons I don't know where a crisis is a possibility for, you know, to have a big crisis and a small crisis and then perhaps a smaller one and then a bigger one. You know, I mean, it's a possibility, but, you know, you've got to look at the fact that, I mean, globalisation, the world is getting more and more interdependent, interrelated and interconnected. So that might be one of the reasons why the crisis, I mean, this one, you know, looks like a big one to me.
Absolutely.
And to get back to follow on from my point that you answered, I think what happens, and, you know, I'm at a pretty good, I've had quite a fair amount of experience of sort of like blowing out the case for socialism in front of thousands of people and just seeing them like sort of glaze over and just walk away. And I think one of the reasons for that is that when you actually tell people about socialism, the social relationship that they're in, you're letting them know that they're being taken for chumps.
They're being taken for chumps,
and they don't like that. They don't like hearing that. And the other thing is that, you know, we're all conditioned by our situation, like all things. And if we look at our situation, we're grown up as members of the working class. And we're told something about us that's totally, totally untrue. Because whenever a politician, a corporate, an academic, people with power, people with influence, whenever they refer to us like the working class, you do everything to reproduce this fantastic society of ours, this complicated, unbelievably technological society of ours day to day. They seem to always refer to us as ordinary people. Now, if you're conditioned to think of yourself as an ordinary person, who you believe yourself to be determines what you want, and all ordinary people want is an ordinary life. And there are these people who've got all the money, the influence, the power. They must therefore be extraordinary. So therefore, what we do, we allow these people to interpret our lives for us, to tell us what to wear, what to eat, how to think, who to be. Now, to be working class, to be a servant, we have to be humbled. And that's all part of like being convinced that we're ordinary. And the point for the capitalist class is that humble people don't make revolution, they do as they're told. Now, what that means to me is that we, the working class, lack esteem. We have ego. We're allowed to have lots of ego, which is like the substitute for esteem. We've never really had a good look at what we are. I mean, the word esteem comes from the verb to estimate. We've never made an estimate of who we are. We sell ourselves for a wage, salary, or a fee, a price. You know, and as we know, like this is the labour power is a commodity, and a commodity, as we've heard earlier, is priced on the amount of necessary labour time gone into its production. Well, if we look at us, you know, I know for a fact that my parents went out into society, worked long and hard to make sure I had a life, food, clothing, shelter, medicine, education. They went out and did their part. So without that, I mean, without that work embodied in me, I wouldn't be here. You know, as like our work is embodied in commodities, my parents' work and society is embodied in me. And without my grandparents, my parents wouldn't be around, so therefore I wouldn't be around, so their work is embodied in me. So you can go back as far as you like, even beyond the time we became modern humans, and every living thing that's led up to us, living, breathing, thinking, considering here today, has had to work, struggle, overcome, discover, educate, love, nurture, all requiring effort, all requiring work. And we are the living embodiment of all that work, or we sell ourselves for a price. When if we add all that work up, embodied in us, we are priceless. There's the contradiction. And that's what I think we have to do as a party, is to give our class some self-esteem, to make it think well of itself, to get it to be disgusted with its servant status.
Short while ago, somebody this meeting referred to the critique of the socialist case that we hear so many times about the so-called selfishness of human nature, in double inverted commas. And very often this critique is based on the fact that we believe that in a socialist society people will work voluntarily, give voluntary contributions towards the production of goods and services. And, of course, there's the other side of the coin taking from the free store. But it's the voluntary aspect of it that I just wanted to concentrate on here briefly, because we've heard so many people saying that this attitude is unrealistic, that we think that people will, on a mass scale, work in a voluntary way. Now, it's interesting, isn't it, how things have turned out, particularly now and in the recent past. Of course, voluntary work has been around for decades, for hundreds of years. But we're noticing that in this latest crisis of capitalism, more and more enterprises are forcing or encouraging, a mixture of both, workers to work on a voluntary basis and to do more and more of their work unpaid. Now, I remember back in the 1980s, reading in some book, I can't remember the title now, but the statistic was at that time related to the UK that there were about 20% of the population, I'm not sure whether they were including adult children as well, but 20% of the population in the UK was involved in some type of voluntary work. So, as I say, that's back in the 80s. Now we read about it all the time. The libraries, for example, because they're short of cash, are taking on, they're shedding quite a lot of their temporary paid staff and full-time paid staff, and they're taking on voluntary workers. So there was some TV report about some ladies, inverted commas, in the prosperous county of Buckinghamshire. Their village library had closed down, Buckinghamshire County Council could no longer support keep it, could no longer afford to keep it open. So all these relatively well people, well off people, were going into their library and running itself. That's just a small example, but we hear about it all the more now, and even from our so-called practical politicians, the coalition, they're talking about people getting involved more and more in the big society, this type of capitalist propaganda crap that we hear so much about. It's based to a significant extent on people making contributions to running parts of society, to producing goods and services. So really, that the people who thought that we were being so impractical by talking about how by advocating voluntary work, their critique of us has proved to be completely wrong. Of course, in the past, in history, when people were going out in the Victorian ages with soup kitchens, and the voluntary work was going on then. But it's going on now. We're more aware of it. Even the mainstream politicians accepting it. And just one other thing that I'd like to add to this, the big difference, of course, as we're, I think everybody is well aware of, as far as voluntary labour is concerned, of course, if you're under capitalism, if you work voluntarily, you don't get any money, usually, for your voluntary work by the nature of it. You could try and get something for free in the shops, and of course, the police are on your backs like anything. So, really, as far as practicality is concerned, voluntarism on a widespread full-time scale is a complete non-starter and is unrealistic under capitalism, under socialism, it's the most practical thing that there could possibly be, because, okay, people give their labour. Do they need to buy things in the shops under socialism? Of course they don't. They go along to the distribution store and they pick up what they need for free. So most practical there. So the reality, what I'm saying is that the events of recent years has turned has made our critics look fools.
So perhaps the saviour of capitalism now is to introduce the system of voluntary giving in shops like Sainsbury's and Tesco to say to balance the voluntary workers who are out there. Well, you never know. Somebody might come up with that. So, Bob, let's hear something first, and then
yeah. I just maybe to follow on from that slightly, but all right, there is a recognisable kind of phenomenon, I guess, within a modern capitalist economy, and that's unpaid work. Now, you've touched upon one side of it, which is obviously, you know, voluntary type things. The other one, and this is a huge, huge thing, is unpaid work by people in workplaces. Yeah. All right. Now, this again, this comes back to my trade union work. All right. You know, I when I was in management in retail, for example, was contracted to work 40 hours. I regularly, around Christmas, was working 60 hours a week. You know, I did one stint over 8 days where I did 78 hours and then got in trouble for refusing to come in on my day off. But anyway, I'm not bitter. Yes, I am. But on a more useful basis, one of the great pieces of sport I used to do in Odbins was take the head of human resources, i.e. the personnel guy, out, because I used to be in contact with him all the time, obviously, over employment issues, and get him drunk. And he'd say all sorts of injudicious things to me. And at one point, seriously, one of the things that I heard that this guy told me once was, by his calculations and by the calculations of the board of Odbins, unpaid work got that company through the first 6 weeks of the year, i.e., you know, they were, the money they were making on the first six weeks of the year, their turnover, basically was the end of what they got for free from the workforce, essentially, you know, of the entire company. And this, you know, it was a fairly big company, Odbins, about 400 shops at its biggest point. Now, that's a phenomenal amount that they're getting. This is a current, you know, and this is sort of system-wide. You know, I mean, we all know about overwork, you know. I won't go into any more anecdotal, you know, examples, because I'm sure we all have them. So, but I'd say this is part and parcel of the same thing with voluntary work. You know, it's about, as we've been saying, increasing the rates of profit, increasing the rates of exploitation, getting more out of us, squeezing more out of us. I've had this argument, and I'll shut up in a bit, with local community organisers in Colliers Wood, who are trying to get people to voluntarily run, including myself, run the library in Colliers Wood. And I'm not going to say what my exact response to them was, because, you know, we want to keep it fairly sort of clean. But what I was saying was, you're replacing paid work, but by Unison members here, you know, by people who might actually, you know, need to do the extra 20 hours to make their wages up. All right, if you're doing voluntary work for them, you are abolishing paid work for a lot of people, and, you know, you're going to be pushing more and more people to the margins. Like I say, I think this is part of a wider sort of problem, unpaid work. You know, we're already proving that we can live in a post-capitalist society. Unfortunately, we still we need money, you know, to reproduce ourselves and live, and our living standards are getting squeezed because of it. It's another, you know, urgent indicator of why we need to move beyond a capitalist society.
From what Rob was saying, of course, it's double unpaid work, isn't it? Because you're being unpaid for half your work anyway, and then there's the unpaid work on top of that. This big stuff Vincent was talking about, big society anarchism, as I call it. It's interesting, when David Cameron became Prime Minister, I was at the Anarchist Book Fair that year, and a lot of anarchists were kind of like a bit confused. I'm not having a go at the anarchists, by the way. Hold on a minute. The rhetoric. Is there a critique coming from the right which marries up with left-wing anarchism? I think this is what Adam. We'll probably get some of this afternoon about how there is a nominal crossover in terms of, you know, which political party likes charity the best, the Labour Party or the Tories? The Tories. Why? Because the Labour Party are statists. They believe you solve problems with social democracy. Therefore, charities can be pushed to the margins. The Conservatives, historically, argue the opposite. They don't like social programming from the top. They like the, have this idea in their philosophy of organic, you know, reproduction at the basic level, which, again, corresponds with big society anarchism. The idea that you don't need the public sector, you don't need people that will, you know, proper contracts and all the rest of it. You need, you know, people can do it themselves. They don't need leaders. They don't need someone telling them what to do. They don't need plutocrats, you know, directing things. They can do these things, run libraries themselves, which, of course, is a very seductive idea, isn't it? And it does, again, I've used this word rhetoric a lot today. I do apologise. Rhetorically, again, a lot of politics is rhetoric. Does link in to the kind of arguments that the SPGB will use or certain anarchists will use. So you have to be aware of that ideologically, that it's a very similar logic. There's a similar discourse being used here. Why? Because of the reasons Rob's been highlighting. It undermines the labour market. It undermines people. What undermines doesn't undermine, well, it does actually undermine the labour market, but principally undermines people in the, or people's power inside the labour market. And so the paradox being, of course, it does point beyond the labour market, which is absolutely crucial to capitalism. If, without it, you can't have capitalism. So, there's a certain paradoxes here. So, in terms of, I've spoken to a Tory. I was talking to an American neocon the other day, and it was quite interesting how, on a very basic level, on a discourse level, we could share a lot in common. He had a background in Trotskyism. All the neocons do.
You were in the Monday Club.
I was in the Monday Club. And the idea of the struggle for a better society, liberalism in his case, communism in mine. That's just one side of conservative thought. Then you've got this Cameron Red Tory type stuff which is coming through about the idea that people can spontaneously reproduce society. Well, you know, what can we do about that, comrades? I mean, that's quite interesting, isn't it? They've actually admitted it now. You don't need people telling you what to do. You can do it yourself. And that's coming from the Conservative Party. Interesting.
I mean, it's fraught with contradictions, of course.
Of course, absolutely.
Start to look into it. Cameron is saying we'll actually provide financial support for people to do what is needed in society. But of course, we will actually control how we give the financial support on the basis of our own agenda.
Yes, absolutely.
We give power to the people as long as the people are doing what we suggest. That
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Janet.
Yes, back to the volunteering. I was glad to hear the distinction between where you're working for no money in capitalism, everyone else is getting it, but you're not, unpaid work, and volunteering. Now, one thing I've noticed, particularly since the old unemployment centres went, and brought in the labour exchanges, when they went and the job centres came in, volunteers coerced, struggling, dragged into charity shops all over Britain under this system of work trials or workfare. This has been going on for at least 15, 20 years that I know about, where, you know, if you want benefits, you have to, every so often, depending how long you are out of work or out of paid employment, have to go onto these schemes that might last for a month or 6 weeks. But someone said it over there where work companies stay open because people go in and work voluntary. The job centres have been sending a reserve army all over the country, and this has been going on for, I know of, 20 years, you know, even now. They have the children on one, they call it training and apprenticeship, and, you know, some apprenticeship is worth it, you know, things that are socially necessary, plumbing, you know, stuff like that. But to get to the point that I want to make as well, capitalism, in my view, would never have gone on as long as it's gone on in this last, say, the last 30 years, if it weren't for what is called the third force, which the government alludes to all the time. I see it in lots of lefty magazines and all this sort of stuff. All those, the millions of carers that are about. Now, I know of another set of carers who nobody talks about unless it's a charity, which I don't have anything, you know, I really wish we could get rid of them quickly, charities. But the children who are looking after the drug-addled parents, the children who are looking after dementia parents, the carers, who shouldn't be having to put up with this sort of stuff. We live in a system which has totally outgrown any usefulness or does anything to us. It maims us every day. I watched the news yesterday. 4 miners went in Wales. It hurt me because I was reading the history of the working class in England and all this sort of stuff, where I saw a section where it said 4,000 were wiped out in the 1880s at one go. One village went, 4,000 miners. And from I read that, capitalism, they're dying at the Olympic Stadium, men and women are falling off a scaffolding. All these buildings where you see the Donald Trumps stand in front and say, I built that. No, you didn't. Somebody else did and somebody else cleaned the windows. Capitalism maims workers. It's not just about the money. It ruins our relationships. It makes us cruel to our children. It makes us cruel to our parents, our brothers, our sisters, not all of us. If you can afford to pay the bills, you're not going to have an argument over money in your house. Domestic violence would not happen to an extent. It would still go on because of patriarchy and all the rest of the bullshit, but it wouldn't happen in the extent that it goes on to in the way we see. Capitalism is maiming us. I saw a 10-year-old baby with my colleague the other day in a hospital, just being born 10 days old. And thought, what sort of life are you going to give this beautiful child? We have to get this message across to the rest of them and get them to take a bit of responsibility.
Okay. Anyone else would like to make a comment or ask a question?
Yeah, just come back to volunteering. I mean, I've pointed you in the direction on Facebook of a really good lecture given by a guy that was illustrated, RSA, on how incentive works, and it's well worth looking up. It's on YouTube. If you go to type in RSA, you'll find it. And essentially, what the guy's saying and what's being illustrated is that money, the more money you throw at something to incentivize people, the results do not correlate. And it spoke of one company dealing with software. And once a month, it just, brings people in for a day and says, like, get together and just get on with anything you want to do. That's sort of, like, creative and it's something to do with the business. And they just get in and they work. And that's where their best ideas come from. People just working on their own initiative with, no extra money incentive, just doing something that they think's worthwhile or they enjoy. So, and the other thing about about society, if people want to be free, what they really got to appreciate is that you can only be free when you give freely of your socially creative abilities, and therefore you go on to take freely of what's in the common store, because freedom essentially, the foundation of freedom is a life without price. So that should be an incentive. When you appreciate that, to sort of like go into a socialist society and be prepared to volunteer. And as William Morris said, I just had his one. William Morris once said that one volunteer is worth 10 pressed men.
And it's quite interesting because I think in human resources, it's now a commonplace idea that if you can actually get a worker on board, on message. You can actually do without one in three of the people that you actually employ. It's actually worth it further than a person to get somebody on board to get them enthusiastic about their work. And I think also we had an interesting exercise not so long ago at our own place of work where we actually asked people what motivated them, or the management asked people what motivated them. And actually monetary remuneration came actually very low down on the list. I don't know whether it would have done if their jobs were under threat at the time, you might have to take that into consideration, but I think it's very easy for employers to capitalise on that, to make use of that and encourage that kind of free labour that people would very often give. I mean, your six weeks of the year, I had a quick calculation, that's one day in every 2 weeks that everyone is actually giving for free. And I know I have seen some calculations which suggest that, many firms would actually be in severe crisis if they did not actually receive that kind of free labour on a regular basis.
I was in the job working at school, and we did loads of work that was outside our contract. You know, it's not just the amount of time you put in; it's the kind of work you do.
Brian, do you?
I'm trying to respond to this sort of linking up, David Cameron with anarchism, you know, as if conservatives and anarchism sort of go together like horse and guard kind of thing. Look, you have to face the fact that there's an interesting contrast, actually, between Margaret Thatcher and the present Prime Minister, actually, because Margaret Thatcher was basically saying the only thing that exists, actually, are individuals, the government, and capitalism, OK? Now, is the switch over, because what he's brought in is this conservative tradition of sort of voluntary thing. But, of course, what the capitalists are into is not, and what Cameron's into, is not actually giving power and responsibility to local people to run their own lives. Like, this organisation is a form of voluntary association to organise people organising themselves, which is what anarchism is all about, people organising their own life. It's not that. It's a kind of smokescreen, really. All this idea about big society helping things, you know, power to local community is just a smokescreen. It's ideological. It's ideological. Because what's really going on is all what is now public services, particularly with relation to health, social services, education and whatnot, is given the opportunity for capitalists then to move in and to privatise what up to now has been actually, particularly things like the health service and things. And it's interesting that most anarchists actually are very keen on the National Health Service. You know, so it's a kind of smokescreen, this Cameron's. It's a big smokescreen. It's giving opportunities for capitalism to move in when things are freed up. And they are moving in, you know. They're just... Wasn't it your magazine or one magazine was saying that that with the health service now, that these private health companies are like vultures? Yeah. They're like... Was it in your magazine? I read it somewhere that basically what's happening is all these big private health corporations are like vultures, yeah. Like vultures around, you know, what's happening. So that's...
Yeah, and leading on to this point, The standard viewpoint amongst the capitalist class is that the public sector is a drain on the private sector. We all say it's the opposite, and I agree with you. It's actually the other way around. The private sector, the public sector, is a milking cow for the private sector. No question. Particularly now, I agree with everything you just said about the David Cameron. And what I'm talking about at discourse level, it's very important that if the ruling class start adopting or aping certain language features that we will use ourselves, and that's obviously interesting from a propaganda point of view, and it says a lot about where things actually are. Of course it's a smokescreen, I completely agree. And it is interesting that the contradiction, of course, in what Margaret Thatcher was talking about, there's no such thing as a society, that is an untenable position, always was an untenable position, and the modern Conservative Party has to reflect that in some way, and so therefore you have this rather silly attempt to bring in sort of old one nation Toryism with the market, which complements what the Labour Party did when they sort of moved towards the market away from social democracy. You know, so you've got this kind of these ideas coming together. So you've got like a kind of like a social market, but social with a small s, very small s. Because the only way you can have a market, and this is the point that even Adam Smith makes in the theory of moral sentiments, you have to have a society. You can't not have a society to have a market. There has to be a prerequisite. There has to be a certain level of socialisation for even a barbaric system like capitalism to take place. There has to be a certain level of civilisation. And this is true. One other thing I was like to say, it's interesting... work ethic, that's the new thing that's in now again, isn't it? It's ironical. Isn't it ironical that at a time when the working class are being squeezed as much as they are, that the ideology of work and unpaid work and even with unemployment going up, of people still blaming the unemployed and saying, well, people are not contributing, they're not doing their bit, even though the unemployment figures have gone up in the last 4 years, like that, shape of a curve, in relation to the economic crisis. I mean, One of the reasons, problems we've got, of course, is if you're dealing with a population who can't even understand that when you have an economic crisis at the level of severity we've had in the last 3 or 4 years, and unemployment has corresponded to that, people still can't make an automatic link between those two factors. Now, that is a serious intellectual problem. Never mind the emotional side I was talking about earlier. We have to get around that. This is very, very basic mathematics. We're talking super basic mathematics, which I would have thought a 15-year-old could understand. But again, there must be reasons why people can't make that deduction, because obviously they can, really. So why don't they? What stops them? What stops people what stops people going, unemployment goes up because there's an economic crisis, wasn't caused by us, therefore we're not to blame, but we're going to blame the unemployed or blame people for not trying hard enough. We're all in this together, all this kind of crappy rhetoric we're hearing. So there are contradictions, and, you know, how people rationally, again, come back to that point, work stuff out, I mean, or how they don't rationally work stuff out is of interest. And again, it seems to me there's an emotional blockage in the system here. We're still trailing way, way, way behind as a class in terms of understanding. But maybe that's part and parcel of the process. We have to go through this slightly silly reactionary period before we start to weigh things up.
One of the most extraordinary rationalisations I ever came across is that I was discussing this with somebody, well, this was quite a few years ago, and he was of the opinion that capitalist crisis was a result of large numbers of the working class suddenly deciding that they really didn't want to work and actually becoming unemployed.
Yeah, there you go. I think I read somewhere, I can't reproduce it word for word, to give you an idea of the meaning of what was said, is that society is always like lagging behind its like possibilities. Yeah. And then every now and again it plays catch up. And it doesn't completely catch up, but it makes a leap and it gets nearer to its time. So, hopefully, that's going to happen sooner rather than later, if that's the case.
But I think it's quite clear that capitalism, the very idea of it, is synonymous with barbarity.
Yes.
Certainly, humanity is on the receiving end of the atrocities of this monstrosity of capitalism that exists. And that is backed up by the fact we've been talking recently about voluntary work, whether it's a voluntary work in isolation or unpaid work, certainly in the workplace where workers are working for nothing. We're being asked by our monstrous mainstream political leaders to make contributions unpaid, in the very system which dictates that everything, or practically everything, has a monetary price. Doesn't no matter how valuable and vital it is to us human beings to survive, whether it's the roof over our heads, whether it's the education that we need, whether it's their health service, it's all got a monetary price which people are being forced to pay under this capitalist monstrosity. Whereas on the other hand, they've been saying, they're being told by these capitalist politicians, you should go out and work more for nothing. So it's just ridiculous, and we need a proper human substitution for capitalism.
Yeah, I think one of the features of human beings which actually makes socialism a possibility is also works against us very much within the context of our current society, and that is that people do want to be cooperative. And therefore, in the workplace, you go to work for wage or being exploited work, but you simply could not do that work if you didn't actually believe, in some level of your being, believe in it, and you had some commitment to it. And I know people, I have to undergo some kind of double think at work all the time. It's like if I simply kind of kept in mind that I was just simply there to be exploited, I'd be sitting there grumbling away to myself and my days would be absolutely appalling. So I have to actually engage in this double think and actually, and sometimes I put in extra hours because actually sometimes I'm doing a little bit of work that occasionally looks as if it might be useful to somebody and I've got engaged with it, you know. So I think it's that quality of human beings that